Imagine the scene, okay? You walk into a shop. And some of you are already with me now, aren't you? You walk into a shop, which you've probably done a lot of so far this last few months. You walk into a shop and you go in, and I've had this happen to me, and you go in and there isn't much in there. It's often a clothes shop, and there's just a few racks, a few tables, not many clothes on them. It's always got a scrubbed wooden floor. And you walk in and you think, this is expensive. You can just tell, can't you? It's always that scrubbed wooden floor that does it for me. You can just tell it's really expensive. And they don't have a lot out on the shelves, just a few items. And all of the assistants look as though they've just walked, or the shop assistants, they've just stepped out fresh from some kind of modelling photography shoot. You know the kind of shop I'm on about. Well, many of you do. Maybe not all of you do. But I don't like those kind of shops. Because when I then go up to the clothes and I look at the tag, there's no price. Have you ever been in a shop where there's no prices on there? And you know what they say, don't you? If you have to ask, you can't afford it. You can't afford the cost if you've got to ask. And today, slightly tenuous link, today I'm going to be talking about the cost. I'm going to be looking at the cost of the vision that we have as a church, the cost to us as individuals. You see, we've been going through our vision as a church, what God has called us to do, why we're here in Bromsgrove, what it is we're to do, and the kind of church we are to be. And we're a few weeks into that, and we've been looking at that by going through Isaiah chapter 61. And so far, we haven't got past the first line of Isaiah 61, even though I think this is week four. Don't worry, we will be going slightly more quickly through the rest. But so far, we've looked at that we have to preach good news to the poor and that we need to be full of the Holy Spirit. And we did it in a different order. We did full of the Holy Spirit first, because we know that we need to be full of the Holy Spirit, because he is the one that motivates us to go and do the things that he has called us to do. So it's for him that we do it, and it's he who motivates us to do that. And then we looked at the good news. What is the good news? And we looked at telling our stories, telling the story of what God has done for us. That's the good news. That's how we share it. We don't have to come with big, complicated explanations and arguments. We just say, well, this is what God has done for me. It's good news to me, and it's good news for you. And then last week, we looked at, actually, as a church, we are called to the poor. That is going to be our focus. That is who we are. We're called to bring that good news to the poor. And we looked at who the poor were, and we looked at a couple of categories, those who were materially poor and those who were spiritually poor. And then this week, as I met up with someone and we were talking about what I'd said last week, and they were very clever and they thought of a third category that I hadn't touched on, but I am going to mention now. You see, there are materially poor and spiritually poor, and often the two intermix. But also, there are those, and I thought of a better phrase, but I thought, well, do you know what? I don't know how to better phrase this. So forgive me if I phrase this badly, but those who are physically and mentally poor. So what I mean by that is those who are physically dependent on other people. Those who have dependencies that mean they cannot look after themselves, whether that's physical or mental health. There are people who can't look after themselves in that way and are constantly reliant on others. That's a big need, and it seems to be a growing need in our communities. And actually, that is a need that, again, spans sort of the material spectrum, if you like. But often, you see those who are materially poor are also physically poor. And the two often go hand in hand for one reason or another. And so I just wanted to mention that because I thought the person who I was chatting to had a really good point there. And I wanted to make sure I covered that and said, hey, let's not restrict ourselves. We need to see wherever there's need, and we need to be there to meet it, because that's what God does and that's what he calls us to do. But today we're taking a sort of slight detour from Isaiah 61 in one sense, because we're looking at the cost of the vision that I've been laying out week by week. We know there's a cost to following Jesus. We know that. We experience that, and we'll look at that. But also there's a cost for us as we go to the poor. And we're going to start by looking at Jesus and what he did. And in Luke chapter 4, verses 17 to 21, all the verses should, all the scripture that we read today should come up on the screen. We looked at this briefly last week, but let me read this to you. And it says this: "And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him." It was given to Jesus as he sat in the synagogue. "He unrolled the scroll and he found the place where it was written, 'The Spirit of the Lord is upon me.'" Okay, he's quoting from Isaiah 61 here. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." And he rolled up the scroll and gave it back to the attendant and sat down. And the eyes of all the synagogue were fixed on him, and he began to say to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." So Jesus is saying, "I am the fulfillment of Isaiah 61. I'm the one that's come to fulfill it. I am the fulfillment of it." And we see that in order for Jesus to fulfill that, he had to pay a great cost. The cost for Jesus was to take on all our guilt and our shame, all of our sin on himself on the cross, to face that wrath of God that was rightfully ours. He bore that for us so that we didn't have to. That was the cost for Jesus, our Saviour. But it wasn't just on the cross. As we look forward over the next few weeks to Christmas and we celebrate his birth, just think about it. Jesus became a baby. Babies are helpless and dependent on others. But Jesus, the Son of God, became fully man. In John chapter 1, verses 1 to 5, it says this: "In the beginning was the Word." This is talking about Jesus. "And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." Jesus was there with the Father. He was God. He is God. He was there at creation. Through him and by him, all things were made. He left all that behind. What a cost. What a price to pay, leaving the glory of the Father to be a helpless baby, totally dependent on two youngsters from Nazareth, the son of a carpenter and Mary. You know that? What a cost. It's astonishing that Jesus, who was the very God, the Son of God, would do that. What a massive, massive price to pay. And then as he grew, he was rejected by people. He was rejected by the people in his hometown who he grew up around. People said that nothing good comes out of Nazareth. There's nothing good comes out of there. And that's where Jesus came from. The religious leaders all walked away from him. He had disciples walk away from him. The cost was unimaginable. But it's good for us, I think, to try and imagine it, to meditate on it, to think about it. Let it sink in. Just let it sink in, the cost of Jesus coming to earth and laying aside his majesty, his glory, those royal robes that he deserves. He laid them aside and paid that price so he could come and live on earth. And then, of course, it led to the cross. When it comes to paying the price of a calling, Jesus knows better than us what that takes and the pain of that. And you see, what I wanted to do was set all this in context so that when we come to the cost that we pay and the price for us, we look to Jesus and go, yeah, it's not that much really what we're being asked to do, is it? Not in comparison. Because as in all things, Jesus has gone before us and set the example. So what about us? What is our response to this? What about the cost that we have to pay? What is the cost? Is there a cost to what we do and how we follow Jesus? Well, let's look at another few verses. This is from Matthew chapter 16. Matthew 16, 24 to 26 says this: Then Jesus told his disciples, If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? When Jesus said this, of course, he hadn't been to the cross yet. So you have to understand this in that context, that Jesus is saying to his disciples, you've got to take up a Roman form of execution if you're going to follow me. They had no idea, really, what that meant. What that meant for them, what that meant for Jesus at the time. Because Jesus hadn't been to the cross at that point when he said that. He knew he was going. And obviously the disciples would know that. And we see this in the context of that. We know, don't we, that he went to the cross. But what does that mean for us to go after Jesus and take up our cross? Well, it means death. The cross means death. It meant death for Jesus. It means death to our agendas. It means death to our pride. It means death to living our own lives. It means denying ourselves, our ambition, our wants, and putting God's wants first. It means denying our own agenda and saying, God, I'm going to live for your agenda, to what you've called me to do. Death's an interesting thing, isn't it? It's final, in one sense. Obviously, we know for us it's not, because we then live forever with Jesus. But in terms of this point and this time here, you can't cheat it. You've got to go through it. It's the same with the Christian life. You can't cheat the calling. You can't cheat death. You can't cheat dying to our own agenda. It just doesn't work. Death is death. It's non-negotiable. It's there. And so following God's agenda means denying our own. And there's no way out of that. A few more verses from Matthew. Chapter 8, verses 18 to 22 says this: Now when Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to go over to the other side of the lake, and the scribe came up and said to him, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. How many of us have said that and then kind of thought, oh, what did I just say there? And Jesus said to him, Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Another of the disciples said to him, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. And Jesus said to him, Follow me. Leave the dead to bury their own dead. Seems a bit harsh, doesn't it, that? I always think that sounds a bit harsh. You think, well, you know, just let him do that first. And then what Jesus was saying here was, if you're going to follow him, there is nothing more important. There is nothing to do first. There is nothing to do as well. There is nothing else but following Jesus. Nothing else is important. There are no half measures. It's just like that previous verse. Following Jesus is all or nothing. And there's no other way to look at it. And I think for too long, Christians have enjoyed being Christians and following Jesus for the benefits. You know, it's like joining a club. What are my club benefits? You know? But being a Christian isn't like that. Oh, we've got benefits. We've got benefits. We've got Jesus. And we're going to live with him and reign forever. But we can't go for that and go, yeah, great, I've got that now. I can go and do my own thing. Because what I'd say is if that's the attitude, then you don't understand what being a Christian is. And I question whether you've really met Jesus. Because Jesus demands from us all or nothing. And I know that can sound harsh, but I don't want to lie to you. I don't want to give you something watered down because I would be doing you a disservice. I would be lying to you if I said to you, do you know what, you can follow Jesus and you can kind of do all this other stuff. No, it's just Jesus. It's just following him. And I've got to be honest with you. I've got to be honest with myself. There's a cost to pay here, you can see, can't you? The question is, are you willing to count the cost? We've got to be honest with ourselves and with each other. We've got to be honest. We can't mess about with this. We can't lie to ourselves or to others. It'll look different for different people. Counting the cost looks different for all of us. So what does it look like for you? For me, and for Pam, I forgot to tell Pam I was going to tell some stories. No, they're all fine. They're all good. For me and Pam, the cost have been things like moving house to church plant. We've done that twice. The one time taking kids out of school, leaving all their friends, there's a cost to pay for them. We led our family through that. And they had to pay the price. Moving away from friends. It's been giving our money. I'll come more onto more of that in a moment. For me, it was giving up my job in IT, which was highly paid, and working for the church, which is not quite so highly paid. There are challenges, there are costs. When God says do this, I remember hearing a story. This is why when I preach, I time them when I'm preparing, and then they always last longer on the day because I think of other stories. I remember sitting at the Brighton Leaders Conference one year, Terry Virgo, I think it was, speaking, saying they were looking to employ another guy on their team leading the church. And they approached him and they said, we'd really love you to work for the church. And he said, I can't. I can't afford to. I can't afford to give up the salary that I'm on. And I sat there and I knew that God had called me one day to work for a church, to do that full time. Whether it was here or somewhere else, I didn't know. As it turns out, it was here. But I sat there and said, I can't ever be in that. I don't want to be in that position where I've mortgaged myself up so much that I can't afford then to give up the job I have. So it involved where we chose the house we chose, not because it was the lovely home we wanted necessarily, but practically it cost the right amount of money so that I didn't get mortgaged up so I could one day give up my job. You know, we pay the price. It's what we do. For Pam, God said, you train as a teacher, that's your calling, be a witness in a school. And so that's meant student loans, it's meant essays, it's meant hard work, it's meant sacrifices as a family to make sure Pam gets the time to study. It'll mean more sacrifices in terms of finance as she does her teacher training. There's all these sacrifices that you make because God says do this, and so you do it and you know he'll look after you. There are times when I've thought, do you know what, this is too much. I can't pay this price anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. It's too hard. And I've looked for a way out. I've looked for the easy option. But there's no point because there's nothing else. It feels like the easy option, but it's not the easy option because it's not the right option. And too many times I've tried to look for a way out. But God says, no, this is what I've called you to. This is the cost. And we've all got to be willing to pay whatever cost God is asking us to pay. So what's the answer? Well, the answer is we look to Jesus. We look at the cost he paid. And we realise that what we're going through is nothing compared to what he went through. Nothing. And it's only very, very temporary. It might feel like a long time sometimes, but it's only a short while in the scheme of eternity. You see, when we have the perspective of eternity, everything seems very, very different. You think, wow, I've got eternity reigning with Jesus. I can do this now. That's okay. I can do it. So there's a cost to pay as individuals. But what does it mean for the vision, our vision as a church? Well, to bring good news to the poor, the kind of church we want to be, is going to take a people that are willing to count the cost, to put other people before themselves, other people's issues before their own issues. The vision will take energy, time, and finance. It may mean that we have to change some of the way we do things. Some of the ways we do things now, they might have to change as we reach different kinds of people. Are we prepared to pay that price? Are we prepared for disruption to the way, the comfortable way we like to do things? We need to count the cost. We need to count the cost of God calling each one of us to the things that are going to contribute to that, to playing our part in that. Whether that's something you do in your time outside of work, or whether that's something you do as your work, your profession. Whether it's something you do as a life group, whether it's something you do as a family. There are things God is calling you to that will contribute to the vision of the church to bring good news to the poor. There will also be a financial cost. With the vision like we have, and like we're laying out at the moment, to reach those in need in our community and beyond our community, it's going to cost money. It already does, but we want to do more. I've been really grateful for the encouraging feedback I've had on going through this vision. It's been brilliant, and I thank you for those who come to me and say, yes, this is it, I really want to do this, I think this is right, this is great. It's often quite hard when you stand up and you say something like this and then it all goes quiet and you think, okay, am I the only one? But actually, no, I'm grateful for the feedback I've had. But you know what? It's time for us to put our money where our mouth is. We've got to count the cost financially. And in talking about this, I want to give you some information and bring a challenge. For information, those of you who've been around for a while will know that 18 months ago or so, as a church, things were difficult financially. And we went through a really difficult period. But with some gift aid and gifts and various things, actually the bank balance looks very healthy now. But, there's always a but, isn't there? But, as things stand, there is more going out of the bank account than there is coming in. Okay, I want to be honest with you. I want you to know, because you give. And we do all sorts of things with the money. So we give to all sorts of things. There's lots of things we do. We're short each month by £300 or so pounds. And it's good for you to know that and understand that. Now, we're not in danger of running out of money at this moment because we've got a healthy bank balance. But we will if it carries on like that. We have to count the cost financially. And the trustees are looking at that. They're looking at, well, are the things that we are doing that we don't need, not doing that we don't need to do, but are there costs that we can take out that don't need to be there? But the truth is, we don't have a huge amount of fat in the budget. We're very careful with the money. And the truth is, I know that God has got all the money that we need for the vision that he has given us. It's there. But he gives it to us to steward, and to steward wisely, and to steward well in giving to the local church. So here's the challenge. We don't talk about this very often, but every now and then it's good to bring up. The challenge is, how's your giving? Are you counting the cost financially? If we want to carry this vision forward, then it needs to be financed. We need to be giving generously, cheerfully. Don't give grumpily. Don't want your money if it's grumpily, okay? Seriously, don't want it. You want cheerful, hilarious, happy givers. In the Old Testament, God asked for a tenth, a tithe. That was the law. I believe we're freed from the law. So we don't teach here that you give a tenth. But I believe that the New Testament, and what Jesus illustrates, is that grace never gives less than the law. In any circumstance, generosity goes beyond the law. It's time for us to count the cost financially. Now, let me caveat that. This only applies to those of you who, for whom Grace Church is your home. If you're from a different church, don't want your money. You give to the church you belong to. If you're not part of any church, don't want your money. This is for those who say, no, Grace Church is where I am. I'm with the vision. This is my home church. Those are the people I'm talking to on this. So if you're part of Grace Church and you don't give at all, can I encourage you? Give, even if it's a pound a week. The principle is important. Give what God says to give. Ask him. If you give occasionally, can I challenge you to give regularly? And if you do give regularly, can I encourage you to be asking God, what's the next step for me in my giving? What have I got to learn in my giving? In the end, it's his money anyway, and we get the privilege of stewarding it. I remember seeing an interview on television with a well-known Christian, I'm not going to say who, and the interviewer said, I've heard that Christians give 10% of all their money to the church. Do you? And he said, yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? And the interviewer said, brilliant? He said, yeah, God lets me keep 90%. It's amazing. Now, we don't teach a tenth, but you get the spirit in which that's said. God gives us enough to give and enough for us. And it's a good thing. If the church has a people who have plenty, but the church itself struggles financially, then the church won't be able to do what God has called it to do. Let's be ready for the challenge to count the cost financially. Let's be willing to invest our time, our energy, our attention, and our finances in bringing good news to the poor. Let's be ready to do it. It's exciting. Now, I've sometimes sat with people who are going through hard times financially, and we as a church have been able to give them money. It's brilliant. Because we go, this is from God. And it's such a privilege to do. We want to keep on doing that. We give money to some guys in Turkey who we support every month with money. And it's brilliant because we can be a part of what's happening there as they reach people that we'd never be able to reach because we're a long way away from them. But we're part of it. We, for the last couple of years, have been giving to a project called The Bridge that the Oasis Church run, a house who help people who are recovering from addictions. That's been fantastic. We've just stopped doing that because we're now, instead of giving to that, we're going to be giving to Hope House that Jared and Helen are running. It's exciting. You are a part of that because we as a church are giving to that. We give to the Catalyst Network of Churches because we are a part of that. And they use that all over the world. And for church planting. It's exciting. And we want to do things here. We're looking next year to move forward with the debt centre. That's going to take finance. We're going to do that across churches. But we need to play our part. And the more we do, the more we'll need. But it's not just money. It's not just money. It's time. How often do we look at how we spend our time? When was the last time you sat down and went, over the last few weeks, how have I spent my time? Has it been God-honouring? It's important we do this, to count the cost of following Jesus and of the vision that we have as a church. I'm going to summarise and draw things to a close. We need to be a people who are ready to count the cost in any way that God calls us to. Any way that God calls us to. But we can't do it alone. We're not called to do this on our own. We do this together, as a body, as a people, as a church. I've counted the cost. I do count the cost. But no matter how many times I've seen God come through, and when he does, everything works perfectly. And all according to his plan. And ultimately for my benefit. But no matter how many times I've seen it, I still get cold feet. I still get scared. When God says, come on, do this. So I'm talking to you about a vision. Let's go and let's reach the poor. Yeah, that's scary. Because that's going to be change what we look like and who we are. There's a cost to count. I still try and back out. Still try for the comfortable option. But we need to encourage one another. We need to support one another. And we need to challenge one another with those difficult decisions that we face all of the time. Talk about it in life groups. Those difficult decisions. Support one another. Here's a challenge. Talk about your finances in life group. Do you know there's a really unhealthy taboo in talking about our money? In our culture, we shouldn't be subject to that. I've sat down with a number of people before, with my finances and their finances, and we've said to each other, show me where I'm not honouring God. Yeah, big one, isn't it? But this is serious. This is following God is serious. There's no other way, and it's all or nothing. And that includes everything. In fact, when, I'll be honest, when I knew I was going to give up my job in IT and work for the church, I sat down with Robin Vincent, who was working for the church at the time and heading up the team before he moved down to plant in Swansea, and we were going through our finances together. And he was saying, show me what they're going to look like when you're living on this. And in that, I made a cut to my giving. And he said, that scares me. I went, yeah, but I'm taking a cut in salary. He went, no, don't cut your giving. That was a huge challenge to me. But you know what? I didn't. And within weeks, Pam had been offered a job that didn't make up all of the money, but it made up enough. And we now give more than we did when I was in that job. God comes through. He's faithful. We're not playing a game. This is God. And he'll do it. Every time. He's done it. Every time. God has never failed me, and he's never failed you. Even if it's felt like it. He hasn't failed you. And he never will. In whatever step you're taking. So let's talk about it in life groups. Let's not get offended by it. Let's have healthy accountability. I'm not saying you necessarily tell your whole life group, here's my finance spreadsheet. And if you haven't got a finance spreadsheet, it's good to have one. And it's good to keep up with it as well, which I don't always. But find someone you trust. Find someone you trust who you can do that with. I think that some of the things I've said this afternoon, I think they've been quite challenging. I found it challenging and convicting as I've prepared this. But here's some questions up on the screen. How is God prompting you right now? How's God challenging you? What are the things I've said this afternoon where you've gone, I don't agree with that? That might be where God's just nudging you slightly. Okay? So just think about it. Where's God challenging you this afternoon? Is there something you need to do as a result? Is there a decision you need to take to count the cost? Is there a decision you've been going, I'm not sure I can do that? If God's calling you to do it, go for it. Said this one a few times, how's your giving? What's your next step in that? Let's not be stationary in it. Let's keep growing in our giving. And if in your head you're now thinking, yeah, I have something to respond to, tell someone. Not right at this moment necessarily, but afterwards or in your life group, tell someone, yeah, this is what God said to me. This is what God prompted me on. This. Ask me if I've done it in a couple of weeks' time or in a month's time or whatever your time frame is. Ask someone. Just say, look, just gently and lovingly, please ask me. Let's do that. Let's challenge one another. Let's help one another grow. Let's be accountable to one another in love and encouragement. Let's be ready to count the cost. Let's be ready to face what God has got for us. Let's be ready to go on an amazing adventure together. It is an adventure. It's going to be scary. It's going to be like a roller coaster. Sometimes it's going to be fun. Sometimes it's going to be, oh no. But every time, God is there. Let's go on this adventure together. We grow together. We encourage one another in it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be good.